It's time once again for our weekly sit down and chat with Matt Stringer, the Chief Executive of RNIB. And we're going to be looking at everything from vaccines to public transport safety to fundraising. Matt, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello, Alan. My pleasure as ever.
Let's start off with quite a serious topic, a big campaign for RNIB at the moment. It's looking at the safety of our train stations, railway stations, specifically around tactile markings.
There was a case at a station in South London where a gentleman very unfortunately fell off the edge of the platform because there wasn't the tactile edge to the platform that guideline and party sighted people. So we have started a petition and a campaign on this. And it's really, I think, caught the mood of a lot of people. We've had a lot of interest over the weekend from MPs and London Assembly members retweeting and signing up to the petition. And I dropped a note to the CEO of Network Rail as well this week on it to get a response that suggested that, you know, clearly it's on their radar, but by the time they get around to sort of do it across the network, it's going to be something like sort of 2028/29, which seems a long time into the future to really address something which is clearly a problem. And as we've surfaced this issue in the last sort of week, we've had a number of people coming forward with their own stories about how they've had near misses as they've been sort of grabbed back from the edge of the platform or almost stumbled into a train. And people who have actually fallen off had some type of accident. So clearly is not only this unfortunate incident that happened in South London, it's much more widespread than that, which I think is why we've seen so much support, actually, because it really hits a nerve with people who see it as a real genuine problem and one that should be addressed.
We think about tactile markings at train stations. You know, we have had these for a very, very long time, for years, in fact, many of our train stations have had this, and it just almost seems unbelievable that they don't all have it already, and there's obviously the maintaining of it as well.
Well, only about 50% of stations do, which clearly across the whole of this sort of UK rail network will probably run to thousands of stations. We, you know, must be over 2,000 stations in the UK, even in a world after the beaching cuts of the 1960s. But the fact there's so many, and the fact that some have and some don't, suggests that there isn't really a plan here. You know, it's either all or nothing. You'd expect them to be, everyone has it in the plan and it's just part of the design of stations, or there's an edict goes out to correct it on stations, or there's not. But it seems quite piecemeal, which in itself is a bit of a problem because it doesn't seem to be a consistent approach to try and get behind it. So it's a serious issue, and with half the network and some, it doesn't really matter about the big stations or small stations. I mean, this incident happened in a small suburban station in South London. In some respects, you would argue the smaller stations might be where there's more vulnerability because they're less manned, you know, fewer people on the platform, you know, platform attendants and people sort of seeing trains off, able to sort of really notice what's going on.
We will have some more on that for you on the website. We'll give you contact details a little bit later. I'm going to move on to vaccinations, the COVID vaccinations now, Matt. Now, I was actually chatting with the National Federation of the Blind in the United States and CNIB in Canada on this topic, actually, this week. And it almost seems as if we in the UK are way ahead, and our accessibility to the vaccine seems to be much better, and accessibility information as well.
So we are on a daily basis putting a lot of effort into lobbying on both sides of the divide to get the interests of blind and partially sighted people taken into account. So we've been working very closely with the Department of Health and Social Care in the UK to make sure kits are accessible, and that was also launched last week, and improved accessibility around a sort of home testing kit, you know, which previously was a very difficult and fiddly experience for sighted people, let alone blind and partially sighted people, having done it myself at home, you know, having to scan different codes and get different swabs in your mouth and put in a test tube and then put in a packaging and get the right label. It's quite a tricky experience anyway. So we've made that more accessible for blind and partially sighted people. On the vaccine front, we've written with Guide Dogs and TPT, you know, a letter basically asking for blind and partially sighted people to be sort of bumped up the priority order. Clearly, there's a lot of competition for different groups of people wanting to be prioritised. And I understand it's tough to sort of get everyone the priority. Although it's interesting, on the back of the campaign that Jo Wiley was running around her sister who had learning disabilities and hadn't been offered the jab and then caught COVID, that the government has announced that the 150,000 or so people in the UK with learning disabilities are going to be prioritised. So there is some flexibility clearly in the running order, but we need to keep agitating, which we've done, and agitating again around the accessibility of information. You know, how do you get notified of a test? What is the media that are used to notify you? are all those fully accessible? Is there a safety net for people that don't have a mobile phone, aren't on email, you know, all those sort of channels that are used to give people notice of vaccines? So we've been doing some good work on that, and they've been taking notice. And I have a meeting with the vaccines minister on Wednesday to keep ramming home the RNIB point. And it's great that he's taken time to see me and see the RNIB, because it shows that they take very seriously the points we've been making about the particular concerns of blind and partially sighted people in both testing and in vaccination.
Let's finish off then with, I suppose, similar to what we've just been talking about, you know, the opening up of the UK, if you like, you know, getting back to that kind of normality at probably slightly different stages. But, you know, that obviously puts a bit of an emphasis on RNIB and its services probably across the board.
Yeah, through lockdown, all charities have had to sort of stop doing a variety of activities. Our volunteering activities have had to be curtailed because you can't have face-to-face activity. Our service delivery, we've been moving more to remote help on things like technical support, support of people who are feeling isolated, with dialing out and ramping up our sort of talk and support and sort of home dialing type activity. Clearly, we've had more effort put in our helpline to make sure we can cope with a great weight of incoming calls, particularly at the start of lockdown. So, you know, I think all charities have seen the need to orientate their services around the art of the possible and the particular challenges of lockdown. One of the big challenges for all charities has been sort of income. You can't do fundraising activities. A lot of face-to-face activities can't happen. You know, those volunteering groups can't come together. There's been a circa sort of 20% fall off in income. And we've seen something not unadjacent to that number. And we've been managing our finances very carefully to make sure we can cope by making appropriate savings and not investing in certain things to sort of cut our cloth accordingly to get through this. The good news, you know, with the lockdown release announcements from pretty much all the devolved nations, you know, with England looking like June the 21st as sort of D-Day to be released, and Scotland putting proposals together, and I know Wales and Northern Ireland, again, with sort of slightly different but similar sort of timings of release, you know, it gives us confidence that actually we can now start to do some stuff, which is great. So I think for us, it's starting now to look forward to certainly the time after the end of June, whereby we should be in more normal state and able to do more external activities involving groups of people. So we are looking at our sort of Marathon Mates activity in sort of May, June. We were sort of curtailed last year, but we're looking to run sort of physical and virtual events up and down the country sort of this year, which will be great, getting people out. And amusingly, I've just had an email this morning on the places we have in the London Marathon, which again is now going to take place properly in October. And again, I think it shows that, you know, London Marathon looking on us favourably as being a sort of good charity partner to get people into the race. I think I'm being gingered up to try and take part as well in that, which I'll think about.
Positive times ahead, we do hope so. Now, if you would like any more information about the items we've been talking about, especially things like vaccination information or indeed the tactile campaign at our train stations, do head to the website rnib.org.uk or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. Matt, lovely to catch up with you. We'll join you again next week, and thanks for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. And just one final thing, it will be great if people did engage on the sort of tactile platform edge campaign, go online and sign our petition. The more people we can get mobilized around that, I think gives us greater credibility to go and engage with people like the Department of Transport and Network Rail and other sort of transport groups around this. Please do engage with that. I'd be very appreciative. Thank you.